Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I'm your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode 53, The Magic of Implied Story Points. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Story Structure and Story Analysis. Hope you had a great week of writing. Listening back to the podcast from last week, episode 52, it was almost an hour long, and I felt like I was really, really comfortable, as I'm getting more and more comfortable doing podcasts every week, and with my new fancy microphone, and I feel like maybe it was a bit slow, and perhaps too much information, and all the clips and everything. So if you felt that it was too slow, or if you thought it was great, just let me know. I would love to hear from you. But I'm going to try and make it a little bit shorter this time and try and get to the point so that, whatever it is that I can help explain about the Dramatica theory of story and the practical application of it, I will do so. This week, the podcast is broken up into three sections. The first one is going to be about inequities and perspective. The second section will be all about Blade Runner 2049, which I saw over the weekend and really, really enjoyed. And then the last is all about the magic of implied story points, which is the article for this week. And they all wrap up together into the same sort of idea, which is the idea of the story form being a way to ascertain what the author's message was, what their intent was. And whether or not they actually purposefully meant to do something, you can get a feeling for, or you can understand what it is that was being said by the arrangement of story points. And so we'll get into that as we go along. The impetus for this week's podcast is a rousing bout of discussion on the Discuss Dramatica forums. If you're enjoying these podcasts and you want to engage with other people who I hope enjoy these podcasts, or at least probably listen to it, you can go over to the discuss.dramatica.com forums. And it's been a couple years of discussions on that particular board. And in the last week or so, there has been discussion surrounding two posts. And I ended up breaking them up into three posts, which, strangely enough, are the three sections. The first one is about a guy stuck in a well and how the different inequities and perspectives work. The second one's all about Blade Runner, and the third one's all about implied story points. So I will leave links to those three posts in the show notes, and then you'll be able to jump to them and actually read more about what it is that I'm talking about. So the first post was a question asking about how could you cast the problem of a guy stuck down in a well into different domains. And the different domains in Dramatica are universe, mind, physics, and psychology. Universe is most akin to a situation, which is exactly what a guy stuck down in a well is all about. It's not about why they are stuck down in a well. It's the fact that, hey, I'm stuck in this well. This is what this particular story is about. How can I actually get out? The problem or inequity with this first post is the understanding of what the Dramatica model of story is all about, and what the difference between inequity, well, I guess not the difference, but the definition of inequity, the different perspectives, and the context that they create. The perspectives, you have four different perspectives, the I, you, we, and they. So I is the main character perspective, you is the influence character perspective, we is the relationship story perspective, and they is the overall story perspective. And each of those casts a different viewpoint on the central inequity. And that central inequity is a single context. It's one thing. And the story form, everything within a story form, if you print out the story engine settings report, those all represent a single approach towards resolving an inequity. It's like there's an inequity that's felt, and then you wrap all these different things together. You use the different perspectives to see different viewpoints of that inequity so that you can figure out how to solve it. But it's a single approach to it. It's not a bunch of different, these people aren't real people. They're not actually seeing things from different points of view. Those would all be separate story minds. So it's kind of hard to think of it this way, at least at first, that that these perspectives aren't real people and they're not actually really seeing these things. You're kind of using the perspectives to define the inequity that's at the heart of the story. It's like if we feel an inequity in our minds, then it's like, well, I certainly know I know it's a, and then I'm going to use a you perspective to kind of approach that inequity, and a we perspective, and then a they perspective, which is almost impossible to step outside of yourself, but to look at that particular perspective from four different points of view so that you can figure out a single approach to actually resolving that. And then that single approach is wound up within the main character resolve, the outcome and judgment, which we'll get into later. So the outcome is like whether or not that approach will succeed or fail. And the judgment is whether or not it's a good or a bad thing. Like all of these are wrapped up into a single context. So it's not like you can put different domains, it's not like you can look at the same domain or area of conflict from two different perspectives, because A, that gets rid of all meaning, there's no point to it, and then B, you can't really, when you have different perspectives on the same inequity, it would be a different context. So if a different perspective is seeing the same thing from a different point of view, then that's actually a different context. So the perspectives aren't there because that's how a story works. The perspectives are there because that's the best way to evaluate the approach towards resolving an inequity. It's like, okay, I have this drive to resolve an inequity or justify it away, and I'm going to look at it from four different points of view, I, you, we, and they, and then I'm going to come up with the best approach to resolving that inequity. So that's what a story is. A complete story, a one story form. And like I talked about last week, you can have different story forms within the same work. But when it comes to a single context, when you're looking at a single particular problem, one inequity, and there's that drive to resolve it or justify it away, let's look at it from the four different perspectives, be able to see them from four different points of view and see how they look differently and how they look like an external state, which would be universe. They look like an internal process, like psychology. They look like an external process, like physics. And then they look like an internal state from mind. And now that I've got all those, it's like, okay, I've seen them from every point of view. I've seen this inequity that's in there, that's like driving it all from these four different perspectives. And now I'm going to either change or remain steadfast. And that's the mind, that the mind concept, the story mind concept, is going to change or remain steadfast. And then the outcome will tell me whether or not that was a success or a failure, and whether or not the judgment will cover whether or not it was a good or a bad thing. But if you change the context, which means if you see the same thing from two different perspectives, you're changing the story form and therefore like changing the meaning. So then the story loses all kind of meaning to it. And as we get into the sixth sense, there's this idea that two different perspectives are seeing the same domain. It loses all, there's no point to it, because you want to be able to see this single inequity from four different points of view so you can figure out the best way to actually solve it. And the fact that these aren't real people, that's the other thing too, which will probably drive some people crazy, is thinking of the characters as like actual, you know, real people that have real thoughts and real ideas, and how the plot is stuff that's actually happening. And what it really is it's the model, the Dramatica model is a model of a story mind, a single story mind trying to resolve an inequity. And the way it goes about it is by seeing things from four different perspectives. And those four different perspectives are held up within the four different through lines. So there's a lot of back and forth in this post. And there is some cross-posting with the Blade Runner one, which I'll get into in a bit about the story judgment. But overall, if you can start to think of a narrative as, you know, within a single context that you're dealing with a single inequity, I think you'll get a better idea of how to actually approach the different through lines. So you'll be able to see the inequity from the different points of view that are needed to figure out the best way to resolve the problem. Now on to my analysis of Blade Runner 2049. If you've read my analysis of Arrival, you know I'm a huge fan of the director. I thought Arrival was fantastic. And I was really looking forward to this film. I'm not a huge fan of the first film, the first Blade Runner. I thought it was good. And I guess maybe because of my age, I should probably love it. I mean, I like the doves flying. That's great. It was all slow motion and everything. It was really cool. But, you know, I didn't love it as much as I love Star Wars. And so, but I was still looking forward to it, especially because Hans Zimmer, huge wall of sound in the Chinese theater with the 4K IMAX laser, which was absolutely stunning. And I thought the film, I couldn't tell if I really, so this is my subjective opinion of it, which really doesn't matter, but I thought the film was, although there's a bit of a Dramatica connection here, the film was super slow. And at the end of the film, I couldn't tell if I liked it or not. I couldn't tell if it had a story or not until hours later and the next day. And then I thought, oh, okay, well, yeah, I guess this does have a story. And then the frustrating part was that it's the exact story form for another screenplay I've been writing. But ours is about robots, not replicants. So it's completely different. And now I'm going to have to change the story form. But if it's great, as somebody told me, if it's a great story, nobody cares if it's the same exact story form. Right? Like Romeo and Juliet and West Side Story are the same story form except for the story limit, and that worked for both sides, although there's a couple centuries in between and completely different setting. But anyways, so the reason why it was hard to tell if I really liked the film or what the story was all about is there was so much distance between the different story points. So if you look at the story engine and you see the 75 story points that are there for the Dramatica story form, usually those are told within 2 hours at most, and sometimes in some animated films in 90 minutes. But over the course of 2.5 hours, and there's long stretches where there isn't any story encoding or story form going on. It's just storytelling, just really great visuals and just getting you into the mood and feeling of it. It's hard to actually tell what the story's about, and you kind of lose sense of the story. It's almost like you have it in your head and you have in your mind all these different story points that are going on, and then you lose it because the distance between them is so great, you start to forget what that actually was all about. And I don't know if you had the same experience, but if you couldn't really tell if you love the film or if you weren't sure what it was all about, and then it wasn't until a day or two later, that would be the reason why, is because there was so much distance between the story points. But there is a really strong story form to it. And my analysis this week is all about that film. Now, the huge discussion going on right now in the Discuss Dramatica forums is the difference or the definition of story judgment. If you're new to Dramatica, there are 8 dynamic questions, and they're split into 2 categories, character dynamics and plot dynamics. The character dynamics are all about the main character. So you have the resolve, the approach, the growth, and the problem-solving style. Those are all about, from the main character's perspective, the dynamics that are going on. The last 4 are plot dynamics, and those are about the story drivers, the story limit, the story outcome, and the story judgment. Now, this in every quad of 4 in Dramatica, there's always one that feels a little wonky, like, what the heck does that mean? In universe, you'll find past, present, future, and then progress. And progress is kind of like, well, where the heck did that thing come from? I mean, I can see that it fits, but it still feels a little bit weird. With the plot dynamics, you have judgment is sitting there as kind of wonky because it seems to take into account the emotional state of the main character. But really what it is it's the author's judgment on the proceedings of the narrative. You know, whether or not the efforts to resolve that inequity were a good or a bad thing. Now, typically what most authors do is they use the one character who is most closely attached to the audience emotionally and uses their emotional state, whether or not they've released their personal angst, to encode and present this judgment, whether or not it was a good thing or a bad thing. So, you know, if you felt that Ryan Gosling's replicant, Kay, if you thought his efforts to resolve the story were a good thing, or if you felt that the author was trying to say that it was a good thing, or if it was a bad thing, that would define the story judgment. And the idea would be like, even if he didn't get everything that he was going for, if it was still, you know, if his sacrifice was a good thing, he resolves that angst. He releases that initial inequity that was within him. It was like, well, this was a good thing. Now, when I first saw the film, I mean, not when I first saw the film, but I mean, immediately after, I had a feeling that he did release the angst, and even though he didn't get the love that he was looking for, he actually felt like he did what he was supposed to do, and that was a good thing. And that's why he's leaning back on the steps and he's looking up at the snow. And I felt like he was sharing the same emotion as his sister. So I got a good feeling from that. And then, of course, another writer who's very verbose and a great writer challenged that idea with the idea that perhaps it was a bad thing and that he hasn't resolved all the issues that are within him. So my first thought was like, whoa, wait a second, maybe I'm completely missing something here. And I've been known to be wrong occasionally. So I wanted to investigate it and asked a bunch of other people, and everybody else I spoke with saw it as a good thing and thought that I was crazy for even bringing it up. But I still wanted to approach it from, you know, a standpoint of being open about it. And that's when I looked towards the implied story points, which will be the huge subject of the article this week in reference to Sixth Sense, and I'll talk about it when I get to that part. But the idea is that when you make certain selections in Dramatica, the story engine feeds you back implied story points based on what it is you're trying to say. And in just the same way that the order of signposts can make it feel more like a success or a failure story, but the order of other signposts and the benchmark and the requirements, what actually goes on in the story, has an effect on the judgment. So it's almost like if you don't know and if you're unclear about a certain story point, like let's say the story judgment, you could make a guess and be like, okay, well, I think maybe it's a bad judgment, but you don't select it in Dramatica and you just wait. And then you go and check other story points. And I guess I'm already talking about the next section, but the idea is that you take the other story points and it will either confirm or deny the initial instinct. And more often than not, it actually confirms it. But the point with the Blade Runner analysis, just so I can stay on track here, is the idea that the story judgment is not the main character judgment. It's actually the author's judgment of the efforts to resolve the inequity, the central inequity, that one singular inequity in the story. And there are two alternate approaches that are presented in Blade Runner 2049. You have Ryan Gosling's character, Kay, who is all about trying to figure out, you know, what happened in his past. He's trying to figure out, it's like, there are clues that are coming up, and it's like, I've got these memories that keep popping up into my head, but there's something that happened in the past, and I think I might be the chosen one. Like, I think I might be what this is all about. And everything that he finds kind of confirms that. And so his concern is, you know, wanting to know the truths of his origin, whether or not he's the replicant, whether or not he was manufactured, or whether or not he was born. And, you know, his domain or his through line, his perspective, his universe, the idea that, you know, it's the body that he's in, this external state that he's stuck in, is a source of great conflict within him personally. And so he is driven to, I mean, you could say that he wants to be loved or he wants to feel love. That could be kind of where he is coming from. But his approach is to figure out who he really is. Like, am I a real boy or am I not? And so he's just, I gotta find that. The alternate perspective is provided by Joy, the simulated girlfriend there. And then that perspective actually gets handed off to Deckard, the Harrison Ford character, shortly after she dies, which is really great. Well, I guess it gets handed off a bit before, and then she shows up and does her thing, and then she dies. But it's a great handoff where it's like, as soon as she is going to be out of the picture, then Harrison Ford is back to fill in that blank. But they both have a different way of dealing with it. It doesn't matter who they are. So the whole argument from the first film, which I thought was great how they addressed it, was whether or not Harrison Ford's character was a replicant or not himself. And I can't remember what the truth is, but I feel like it's always been open to questioning. And I thought it was great in this film, they took Joy's perspective, the idea that it doesn't matter who you really are, it's who you appear to be to other people. And more importantly, what you know to be true is much more important than what is actually true. And they infuse that both in Joy's perspective and in Deckard or Harrison Ford character's perspective. You know, when they bring back Rachel and they show it to him, he knows what he knows. And he'd rather be, you know, with his memories of who she is or who she was, rather than this fake thing that's sitting in front of him. And Joy, on her part, every single billboard, everything you see, she's exactly who you want her to be. She'll be anything you want. And she constantly, just the first time we see her, she's completely flipping and flopping and changing the way that she looks to be better suited to be a partner towards Ryan Gosling's character. And that different perspective, that different alternative is, you know, it doesn't matter who you really are. It's more a matter of whether or not you're willing to change yourself to fit the needs of others. And I feel like the filmmaker's statement was that it was a good thing that he changed to suit the needs of others. I'm not 100% sure, but every other single story point kind of confirms it and reinforces that idea. So you have the two different perspectives. You have his perspective, I got to find out who I really am, and then the influence character perspective, which is like, it doesn't matter who you really are, it's who you appear to be. That the first is the main character through line, and the second is the influence character through line, and they butt heads against each other. Okay, now the two of them have a relationship between each other, which is these two incompatible creatures, beings. You know, one's a replicant and one is simulated. They can't actually connect. And both sides are constantly trying to change themselves to suit the needs of the other. You know, it's always trying to adapt. You know, she's changing how she looks. She changes the way she talks to him. She employs the use of a hooker to actually be able to connect with him physically. All these different things motivate their relationship as they try to integrate into each other's lives, which reflects the overall story problem of replicants actually integrating with humanity. So it's a smaller microcosm of what's actually going on in the bigger picture. The bigger picture is all about revolution and whether or not they're going to overthrow Jared Leto. So that's like on a big picture scale. But then on a tighter, more emotional, more intimate scale, you have two people who can't integrate. And no matter how much they try, they can't actually make it work. And that's where that tension is coming from. And you know, it's not a matter of whether or not they love each other or will they be able to get together. Dramatica is not asking what if. A lot of other story paradigms, they always pose questions like, well, this is the question of the second act. This is the question of the first act. Like, will they be able to do this? Which is great from the point of view of the audience experiencing it and the characters experiencing it. But the Dramatica point of view is what is. What's actually the problem? What's actually creating conflict between these two people? Not what ifs, but what is. And in this relationship, the conflict is trying to get together, actually to fuse and become that family that they both would like to be, but just can't make work. And then that kind of, you know, reflects into the relationship, transfers over into the relationship with Deckard, when Kay, with the whole father-son thing, where it's like, you know, hey, stranger, like they're trying to integrate with each other and conceptualize a way that they can actually fit together. And it just doesn't work. And I just use the word conceptualize. Again, in regards to the original terminology versus the new terminology, under psychology, you have the newer terminology, which is developing a plan, playing a role, changing one's nature, and conceiving an idea. Those are justified versions of what the actual terms are supposed to be. The real terms are conceptualizing, being, becoming, and conceiving. And here you can see that the actual problems between, let's just say, Kay and Joy. Yes, I guess there's a bit of developing a plan, but you would think like, wait, I never see them develop a plan. Well, the actual problem is they can't conceptualize how they're going to fit into each other. I always think of conceptualizing as like puzzle pieces, like how are we going to fit? How can we conceptualize this relationship? And it's not a question of asking, it's the fact that trying to conceptualize, trying to fit that puzzle piece together is what's actually creating problems in their relationship. So I will have a huge, complete analysis of Blade Runner 2049, and I'll probably be writing several articles about it, story forming, all kinds of great stuff, because A, it's a popular film. B, I think the story form is really strong. It's really powerful, and there's plenty of examples of it in each and every scene, even though the scenes might be really stretched out and really far apart. So if you have any questions about any of this, or if you see something different about it, please, of course, inform me. I'm always open to changing the story form if I misinterpreted what it was that the author was trying to say. Trying to figure out the story form for a story is always a matter of trying to guess author's intent. And the story points that are within the story form are a means of evaluating what the intent behind the meaning was. Whether or not they purposefully set out to do it, this is what was communicated to me. It's always a guessing game, like, well, okay, well, what was the actual problem here? I think it's pretty clear that the problems for Gosling's K character are from universe, from the body that he's stuck in. And I think it's clear that the problematic perspective, the challenging perspective from Joy and from Harrison Ford's character Deckard, is this idea that it doesn't matter who you really are. It matters, you know, if you can appear to be the kind of person that people want to be, and all that matters is what you know. Like, I know the truth. You can't tell me any other way. And then the problems in the relationship are all about trying to fit the pieces together, fit themselves into each other's lives. And then the problem in the bigger picture, which is the whole revolution, is trying to figure out where all this is coming from and what it all means, the fact that they can actually have children, that there was an actual child that was born. What does all that mean, and what was the secret hidden message that Tyrell had put, encoded into these original replicants that created all this problem in the first place? I think those are very, very clear. And when you put all these different points in here and you look at the arrangement of the different dynamics in the story, you start to get a feeling for what the filmmaker was actually presenting, actually the message that they were trying to get across. And the story form is just a way of evaluating or measuring that. And then in the next section, I'll explain why the implied story points are actually a better indicator of what the author actually had intended. Lastly, the magic of the implied story points. If you've taken a look at the Dramatica story form, you'll see that there are 75 story points. You don't have to pick all 75. If you're new to Dramatica, that might seem super overwhelming, but the great part about the theory, and especially about the application, is that you can pick as little as, I think, 3 story points, and you'll be able to narrow down out of the 32,767 possible story forms, you'll be able to figure out the actual story form that you're looking at. And that's because all the different story points are all related together. So when you choose main character through line and overall story through line, you're actually picking the influence character through line and the relationship story through line. They are always diagonally opposed, which is why I was talking about last week, where Makiko, a friend of mine, she picks both main character and influence character at the same time. Because, yeah, when you pick a main character through line, if that perspective is seeing the inequity as being in universe, then the influence character is going to be seeing that inequity in mind, because that's how you're able to judge the best way to approach solving that single problem. So the question is posed, why can't you have two perspectives looking at the same domain? And that's because you're leaving out those implied story points. And the question that was brought up was in regards to The Sixth Sense. The original analysis that we did in 1999, I believe, found that the main character through line of Malcolm, the Bruce Willis character, was in universe, and that Cole's through line was in mind, so that it was Cole's attitude that was challenging the fact that, well, if you haven't seen it, you probably don't want to listen to this, but the fact that Malcolm was actually dead the entire time, that was actually challenging. And it's hard for me to talk about this arrangement because it seems so wrong to me now. But at the time, based on my understanding at the time, it seemed to make sense. The alternate version of it that came about as a result of a class that I had given at the California Institute of the Arts flipped them so that it wasn't that he was stuck that was a problem. It's not that he was stuck in limbo that was a problem for the main character. It was that he believed he was still alive, and that it was the fact that Cole himself is stuck around all these dead people that actually brought him out of that belief to see, like, oh, wait, this is what's really going on in the world around me. whether or not Malcolm is in, you know, his problems are a matter of universe, a matter of an external state of being stuck in limbo, or a matter of whether or not he is in mind, you know, whether or not it's his attitude that's causing a problem, you can argue either way. And that's the thing with any of these story points. You can take any one story point and argue it any other way you possibly can. Like, you could take any four issues and describe the story you're working on right now. It doesn't even matter. It's when you try and put them all together into different perspectives that eventually only four fit the bill. So you can always, for any through line, for any perspective, you can always argue either universe or physics or psychology or mind. You can argue any of those domains. But it's when you try and look at the implied story points based on your decisions that you actually start to see whether or not those decisions were right. And that's exactly what was happening with the Blade Runner 2049 analysis that I spoke about earlier. But in regards to the Sixth Sense, let's say we can't decide whether or not Malcolm, his problems are actually a matter of an external state, whether or not he's in limbo, or whether his personal problems are emanating from the fact of what he believes. So Cole, his influence character, will be in the opposite. So let's look at the implied story points. If his personal problems are a matter of his fixed attitude, that would mean Cole's influence character through line is in universe. And so if Cole's problem is in universe, that would mean I'm sad and lonely because I see dead people. So maybe that's his actual problem. I'm sad and lonely because I see dead people. It's actually the situation that's creating this person that he is. But if Malcolm is in universe, you know, his problems are actually about being stuck in limbo, that would imply that Cole's perspective is in mind, that it's his attitude that's creating problems for everyone around him. And that would be the same thing as saying, I see dead people because I'm sad and lonely. You know, they don't really fit together. You know, if Cole is in universe, I'm sad and lonely because I see dead people, that makes sense. But if he's in mind, I see dead people because I'm sad and lonely, that could be a cool story. You just start to see dead people around you because of your attitude. But that's not the story that was presented in The Sixth Sense. It's always the nature of the implied story points that helps confirm whether or not you have the right story form, because we're all subjective creatures. We're all prone to making mistakes and not seeing things for what they really are. So we can all see problems for any story that we want to tell in any domain. But it's when you start setting the domains of different perspectives or certain inequities, and then you look to see where the implied, what's on the other side, the choices that you didn't make, that then that's when it gets reflected back to you and you realize, oh wait, maybe I'm not seeing this the right way. Maybe, you know what, when it comes to Malcolm, and this is exactly what happened when I went to talk to Chris about possibly changing the original story form for The Sixth Sense, when I went to talk to him, I'm like, you know, I understand that, you know, he's stuck and he doesn't know what really happened to himself. But that really doesn't flow well with this idea that it's Cole's attitude that gets him out of that. And it makes more sense that his approach is to stay locked inside his own mind and just be like, hey, I know I'm still alive. And it's like, well, there's something wrong with my wife, but I don't know what it is. It's got to be her problem. And the fact that he's not able to see things for what they really are. And then there's this other kid who sees things for what they really are. He sees dead people all around him. And everybody thinks he's crazy, but he can't help but get away from dead people. So then eventually that breaks down to a point where it's like, oh, that's right. I guess if he's seen dead people all over the place, I guess that means... And then that's why he's able to finally break out of his own perceptions. That flipping the script on Malcolm, that's a process that goes throughout the entire story. It's all one seamless whole. So it's not like these are autonomous people that are doing, you know, their own things and then this other perspective comes in and affects them. You're looking at a single inequity. You're looking at the problem, in this case, of perception. And you're looking at it from different points of view. You're looking at perception from, you know, an eye perspective with Malcolm. You're looking at perception from, I mean, it's not really perception, but it looks like perception from the main character's point of view. I forget what it looks like from Cole's point of view. It definitely looks like perception from the overall story because everybody perceives this kid to be completely nuts. And then the relationship story sees it in a different perspective. So you're dealing with this inequity, or you're looking at it, you're appreciating it from different points of view and figuring out the best way to resolve it. And in this story, it's arguing, well, hey, you know, once you know reality, you can actually succeed and actually be able to help this kid out. You know, once his mom sees and understands exactly what's going on, that resolves in success. And then emotionally for Malcolm, he's able to let go and, you know, understand exactly that his wife isn't leaving him. He's like, he actually left her. It's the implied story points there. So you look and you guess and you try and guess you the best, like, okay, I'm really sure that this is where the domain is, but now let me look and see what the other side of it is. What does that mean? If I make this choice and I'm seeing the problems here, what does that mean? The problems that I'm not seeing, where are those coming from? And that's really the power of Dramatica and of the application, is that it helps point out to you your own blind spots. I mean, the only reason you're motivated to write is because you have this blind spot within you that is, you know, you have no idea what it is you want to write about, but you want to tell this story, but you're not going to be able to see everything. So the great part about Dramatica, and maybe even somebody who knows Dramatica really well and can help you see your own blind spots and interpret Dramatica for you, is that you can actually see everything. You'll be able to understand, well, if you're going to tell this story, you're going to tell this main character, you know, they're going to be, you know, locked in this sort of mindset, then this other, well, actually, no, let's say you're telling the story of the Sixth Sense, and I just know this kid, I see dead people, but, you know, he's not going to be able to really, like, communicate that to the guy he's with. And it's like, okay, well, is it his attitude that would be challenging him? Like the fact that he sees dead people? Or is, you know, not even that. No, because that would still be external. Sorry. Would it be that he's moody and sad and that's what's challenging him to change? Or is it the fact that he's actually always completely surrounded by dead people? And then, of course, the latter makes more sense and logically, like, fits in. And then that would put him in universe. And then there, now you have the implied, okay, well, if his problem is the fact that he's always around dead people and that creates problems for everybody around him and impacts everybody around him, that means by inference, I have to put the main character in mind, and his problem is actually an internal state. Like, he just doesn't know reality, which is exactly what that film is all about. Now, when it comes to Blade Runner 2049 and the whole argument over the story judgment, whether or not it's good or bad, you can also look to other story points. So you can get down to the last two story points for 2049 and just leave the story judgment out. I mean, I guess that's the last story point. So you have a choice, either good or bad. But what you'll find is there are a couple other story points that are still left open to chance. And when that happens and you're not really sure, you know, either you're analyzing or you're coming up with your own story, the best thing to do is to kind of guess, like, okay, well, I'm going to go with good. I think it's good. And then look at the choices of the other one. Don't actually make that selection. Don't make that choice. And look at the other story points. Make your decisions there and see what that implies. Because the order of events, all the different story points, the requirements, what is actually used to reach the goal, those will determine the story judgment. I mean, it has just as much an impact, those different relationships and associations there, on the emotional state of a film, an emotional state of a story, as much as the order of events in the through lines, you know, the signposts, have an effect on the outcome. And then vice versa, the outcome has an effect on the different signpost order. So in this case, for 2049, you have different benchmarks and different, the benchmark actually becomes the requirement. Here's a little Dramatica backroom talk. The overall story goal, if you've noticed yet, the overall story goal matches the overall story concern. So if everybody in the overall story is concerned with misunderstandings and understandings about what's actually going on in 2049, there's a specific instance of the goal that matches that same bit. So that would be understanding. You know, there is a drive to understand what this all means, where this came from. And then what you have is you have a story point of of what's called a requirement. And those requirements are what actually gets you to that story goal. So in this case, because of other different dynamics that you picked up, the requirement for 2049 is either going to be obtaining or it's going to be learning, gathering information. So the majority of this story is it all about trying to obtain something, like to achieve, like not like capture? Is it all about capturing? Are there several instances? You know, it's requirements. It's not requirement. You know, a set of a bunch of different requirements to get to that understanding. Is it all about achieving things, or is the story point really about learning and gathering information? Well, the whole film is about him as the protagonist trying to learn, trying to gather more and more information. I want to ask you a few questions I want to ask you a few questions, you know, that kind of stuff. I guess I'm done with doing impressions. The story requires him to learn these things in order to understand it. It requires everybody to learn where everything is and what happened so that they can better understand and actually achieve that story goal, that story outcome. So there I'm thinking, okay, well, if I had to pick obtaining or learning, that would mean that I would have to pick learning. That would be what the requirement is. The other choice too, the other one that, you know, if it's like, well, okay, maybe I can't make a choice. If you look to the main character through line, if you make that selection of obtaining, that would mean that Kay's character, his through line perspective, the benchmark there would be the future. So they're all matched up in the same way that all the concerns have to be in the same location, you know, to keep a consistency and to keep the integrity of the narrative. Same thing with the benchmarks. So if the benchmark of the overall story is in obtaining, that would mean that the benchmark of the main character through line is in future. And that would mean that Kay would spend a lot of time measuring, you know, his concern of the past based on the future. I don't see him looking towards the future at all. The other choice, if you picked a learning as the requirement, which is what I had already felt, that would put his concern on the present. He's completely judges everything based on what is going on right now. He doesn't even look to the future at all. So right there, you can see I've double confirmed my original intuition by checking out the different through lines, by checking out the implied story points. So even if I hadn't even considered the overall story through line, if I had looked to just the main character's benchmark of either future or present, I would have absolutely chosen present, and that would have implied a benchmark and requirement in the overall story of learning, which sounds way better than obtaining. And here's the kicker. If you select those, that implies a story judgment of good. And everybody already thinks, at least a majority of people, thinks that, you know, the judgment of his efforts to change himself and be the person that everybody needs him to be, you know, to die for a cause. I'm almost positive that's what they said or mentioned to him before he went out and had to do all of his stuff that he had to do, that was a good thing. And that releases his angst of whether or not he was a real boy or not. It doesn't matter what you really are. It matters who you are willing to appear to be in order to satisfy the needs of others. Right there, I was able to figure out the actual story form and ascertain the meaning of it based on the implied story points. So you can come to a film or a novel or a play. You can come to it with a bunch of different story points that you want to tell. But it's going to, when you make decisions and you start locking in the meaning of what it is you're trying to say, it's going to imply, well, in order to make that meaning mean, in order to make it make sense and emotionally make sense to the audience, the person that's going to receive it, it implies these other story points. And so you always need to check and double check and use the fact that there are these relationships that exist to better understand and better appreciate the meaning of the narrative, whether or not you're looking at something that has already been completed or you're actually creating something. So again, the magic of the implied story points, there are all kinds of different relationships in there. The best part about or one of the fun parts about Dramatica is playing around and guessing, okay, well, I think it's, you know, with like 2049, I think it's good, but this guy's making an argument about bad, and it's, for some reason, it's making sense to me. Let me look at the other story points and, okay, well, what does that imply? If I set it to good, it's going to imply this. Well, those benchmark and requirements look good, but if I set it to bad, they look off. They don't feel right to me. It doesn't hold the same meaning inside. And that's really what you want to get across. You want to get the meaning, whether or not you're communicating it. You know, here it's a film it's already been done and it's already communicating something, and you just want to understand what it is that it's all about and how they were able to pick all the different story points. I mean, I'll leave a link. Well, it'll be in my analysis of how I was able to take the story point and turn it into a paragraph. I took a couple of different story points, influence character story points and relationship story points, and crafted like an idea of what the meaning of the film was about. And, you know, the filmmakers did the same thing. They just did it in 2.5 hours and put a lot of space in between them. I condensed it down into a single paragraph. But the idea is that, you know, that feeling that you want to give or that meaning, that thing that you want to communicate to your audience, knowing what it is you want to say and what it is you want to communicate to the other side, being able to look and see what the implied story points are based on what it is that you hold most dear is a really powerful and a strong tool for any writer. That's it for this week's podcast. If you have any questions, feel free to write to me at narrativefirst.com/contact. I hope you have a great week of writing, and I'll see you next time.